Now, what's the next chakra? It's this of the throat or larynx. This is called Vishuddha, or the chakra of purification. Here one is trying to eliminate the interposition of the world between oneself and the pure Om, or the world between oneself and the divine being of God. This is the chakra, so to say, of ascetic disciplines. Vishuddha means exactly purgation. It's like purgatory, where one purges oneself of earthly limitations in order to experience the ultimate. And then we come to this sixth chakra, and this is the great one for our point of view, between the eyes, known as Agya, or the chakra of power, where one hears only the pure Om without any interposition, and one beholds the Lord or deity of the world. One is, so to say, in heaven. The soul beholds its perfect object, which is God. Now, what are we going to do when we get up here? We have one more jump. Here we behold the God, we behold the divine aim of all life. But it is as though there were a cellophane wall between you and the object, and perfect love requires that there should be no wall. So with that withdrawn, the two, soul and God, as it were, are extinguished, and one is joined beyond duality, beyond pairs of opposites. Here, of course, one is beyond art. But I would say that Indian art, Oriental art in particular, deals with the stage between the fourth and the sixth chakras. Either you are beholding the things of the world and experiencing the divine radiance through them, or you are beholding the divine being itself. Now, it's characteristic of Indian art that its stress is on the divine beings. Indian art is a depiction, largely, of divinities. You can go through the great books of pictures of Indian art, and you'll see one after another these great divinities. And when one looks at the Indian temples, there's something quite extraordinary about them. They burst into the landscape. They are not part of the landscape. They emerge, as it were, from a superior realm. They burst into the land. These wonderful caves that are carved right into the rocks. As you go into them, you have moved out of the world of two-eyed optical experience into the world of the transcendent manifestation. Indian art, in general, then, is an art concerned with eliminating the normal two-eyed experience of the world, opening, as it were, this third eye in the middle and seeing the vision of eternity. And it is a kind of vision of heaven. Now, this is rather different, I think, in feeling from the art that one perceives when one turns to the Far East, to China or Japan. Buddhism went from India into Japan, into China. And it brought along with it this wonderful art of depicting heaven, depicting the divinities of the upper world. The natural tendency of the Far Eastern mind, however, is much more earthly, much more matter of fact, much more devoted to things. As Dr. Suzuki once pointed out, whereas in India there is a term meaning myriads, innumerable, which occurs many, many times in their figures indicating the number of years that elapse in the course of an eon and so forth, in China the word for all the things in the world is 10,000 things. In India, you have myriads and myriads and myriads and dreams and dreams and dreams. In China and Japan, it's the 10,000 things. It's the things right here that you see that they're concerned with. And so I would say that in general, there is a sort of shift of emphasis from what may be called the sixth to the fourth chakra, from the place where God is seen in his purity, or where the deities appear as in an epiphany, to this beautiful world, this world of nature and of man, where one is concerned with the idiosyncrasies of this, that, or another apparition, always as manifesting this wonderful glory of the eternal principle.